Welcome back to the Republican Professor Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Lucas J. Mather. I'm also my own host. So I'm yours and I'm mine. It's a new year, 2025. We have a new president this week. Today is the 23rd of January, 2025, years after. You know who. And we're coming back to the Chevron issue. Last time we did the appeals court decision, the lower court. And let's go ahead and I'm not going to summarize that. That's for you to go back. But what we're going to do is we are going to look it up on Google Scholar. And I'm sure that you're going to love following along for that. Google Scholar, here we come. I'm going to share my screen. All right. Now, you go to Google Scholar, you go to Case Law, Federal Courts, you go to Chevron. Now, Chevron is a popular plaintiff, so I've looked this up before pretty recently, so I had it in the search memory. But you're looking for a Supreme Court case from 1984, 467 in the U.S. Reports, page 837, right here is where we're at. And I'm going to have this pulled up while we're going through it. And so we'll get the primary source on the Chevron issue. Now, you remember last time the Republicans lost at the circuit court under Ruth Bader Ginsburg back when she was a circuit judge. It gets kicked up to the Supreme Court. We're going to find out if Reagan wins here. It turns out he does. He does win at the Supreme Court. Justice Stevens delivers the opinion of the court. As you know, Justice Stevens is technically a Republican, but I don't really like him. And remember this. Chevron got overturned last year, 2024. So, as you're going through this and you remember that the Republicans won in 1984, back when Ann Gorsuch had lost at the district court, remember she was EPA administrator under Reagan? Well, her son now is on the Supreme Court and he voted to overturn the thing that. This court decision right here that gave the EPA under Reagan, which Ann Gorsuch had run for Reagan. So it's Gorsuch versus Gorsuch, kind of like Kramer versus Kramer. And my interpretation of that is that Republican mistakes have been corrected by, or at least attempted to be corrected by, Republican judges later. But what do you think? Well, I'm not sure if you have anything to say right now because you don't know anything about it. We haven't gone through it yet. Well, maybe you do know because you've already read it. We're going to read it and make comments. I'm going to read from my paper here. In the Clean Air Act amendments of 1977, Congress enacted certain requirements applicable to states that had not achieved the national air quality standards established by the Environmental Protection Agency pursuant to earlier legislation. The amended Clean Air Act required these non-attainment states to establish a permit program regulating new or modified major stationary sources of air pollution. Generally, a permit may not be issued for a new or modified major stationary source unless several stringent conditions are met. The EPA regulation promulgated to implement this permit program Oh, sorry. This permit requirement allows a state to adopt a plant-wide definition of the term stationary source. Here's where I am right here. So I'm trying to keep what's on the screen with what I'm reading, and I'm reading it just from the paper right here. So I like paper. I like destroying the environment. It's an EPA case, so in honor of the EPA, I'm reading from a piece of paper. I'm having an issue with this tie just doesn't feel like it's all the way up there, but then at the same time, I feel like I don't want to choke myself to death. So anyway, okay, keep going. So it's about the definition of a stationary source. Under this definition, an existing plant that contains several pollution-emitting devices, see? Notice the word device. May install or modify one piece of equipment without meeting the permit conditions if the alteration will not increase the total emissions from the plant. That's what they mean by a bubble concept from last time. The question presented by these cases is whether the EPA's decision to allow states to treat all of the pollution emitting devices within the same industrial grouping as though they were encased within a single bubble is based on a reasonable construction of the statutory term stationary source. So recall, the Democrats wanted the stationary source to mean anything that might emit pollution within the plant so that the plant could have several stationary sources. The Republicans are saying, well, we're always altering and stuff, these things. We're always constructing new ones or tearing old ones down or doing maintenance. We don't want to have to get a new permit every time for a stationary source every time we do that. So we just want to have the entire plant be a stationary source so that we get one permit for the plant and that's it. And then we tinker around and we try to just keep the levels of the total plant, under the conditions of the permit. The statutory construction is reasonable because Congress never specifically delineated which in definition they had in mind, and why would they not delineate what they had in mind? Why would Congress not get that specific? I mean, they got so specific about everything else, why couldn't they get specific about that? Do you have any ideas about what the answer to that might be? I'll give you a second to think about it. All right. You got 535 members of Congress. Yes, senators are members of Congress. See Article 1, Section 1 of the U.S. Constitution. You're trying to get that many people to agree on anything is a miracle. And frankly, what they probably did to get something over the line was they got it over the line and they're not going to tinker with it and screw with it anymore. They got other stuff they got to do. So there are going to be unclear terms. And by the way, a lot of this has to do with the fact that Congress wants to regulate everything under the sun. And why do they want to do that? Because they think it makes it sell that it sells them pretty well to the electorate because the electorate rewards that kind of thing. So this is really about the American voter. The American voter hears something and they go, that sounds like a great idea. Yeah. Oh, you want to save the world by regulating it? Great. Yeah. You want to regulate something else? Great. Great, great, great. The electorate's going, great, 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 because the electorate is stupid. Congress is just doing what they think the electorate wants. So they pile on and 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 pile on. So many agencies regulating so many things. There's no way any human being can keep up with any of it. And there are going to be unclear terms. And some of these unclear terms are quite important, like stationary source. So then you're going to have unelected people like the EPA fighting for what they think would be rewarded by whatever gives them rewards, which is what's happening here. Here we go. The EPA regulations containing the plant-wide definition of the term stationary source were promulgated on October 1981 under Ronald Reagan, Republican. Respondents filed a timely petition for review. Court of Appeals set aside the regulations. In other words, the Democrats on the DC circuit struck down the Republican regulation that made it easier for business. The court observed, that's the DC circuit right here, that the relevant part of the amended Clean Air Act does not explicitly define what Congress envisions as a stationary source to which the permit program should apply. And further stated that the precise issue was not squarely addressed in the legislative history. What do you got here? Congress did not clarify the answer. It was not in the legislative history, that is, the debates in Congress. It was not in this text of the statute. In light of its conclusion that the legislative history bearing on the question was at best contradictory, legislative history basically is almost always contradictory. It reasoned that the purposes of the non-attainment program should guide our decision here. Okay, so it reasoned that the purposes of Congress should guide that's what the purposes mean, the purposes of the program. Congress made up the program. Did you just hear that? Congress doesn't address this specific issue. It is an issue, it's an important issue. The text doesn't address the issue. The text of the law doesn't address this issue. The court says, well, okay, then it's the purpose of the law that should guide the issue. You see, do you see any squirrely things here? Well, the purpose is usually garnered from the text, isn't it? Or is it not? Am I crazy? Based on two of its precedents concerning the applicability of the bubble concept to certain clean air programs, the court stated that the bubble concept was mandatory in programs designated merely to maintain existing air quality, but held that it was inappropriate in programs enacted to improve air quality. Since the purpose of the permit program, its reason for existence in the court's view, not in Congress's view, but in the court's view, was to improve air quality, the court held that the bubble concept was inapplicable in these cases under its prior precedents. Therefore, it set aside the regulations. Let me disentangle this, okay? Republican definitions in their new regulations, filling in what Congress left out under Reagan, were inappropriate according to Democrats on the DC circuit. So, prior regulations under Democrats were held to be appropriate because, in the court's view, those definitions, although not entailed by the text of the statute or by Congress, were more consistent with the purpose of what Congress had set up, not based on the text of the statute, but what the court viewed as the purpose of the statute. So they're saying that the purpose of the statute was more in line with Democrat, regulations that occurred prior to Reagan. This is the U.S. Supreme Court, Chevron USA versus Natural Resources Defense Council, Inc., 467 U.S. 837. I'm on page, where are we at? What page am I on? 842, right? Yeah. I'm on page 842. How do you know what page I'm on? Well, because it says right here, I know it's kind of hard to see, but it's right here. You see the cursor going around like that? Yeah. Page 842. You got to look for those pages on the, let me just show you what I'm looking at. On the printouts that I have, they're along the side, which I really like. And I printed this out from Google Scholar, and it's got pages on the side, which kind of nice. Not sure why Google Scholar's not doing it for the this presentation, but okay. Yeah, I like it on the side there. The basic legal error. Oh wait, sorry. I'm go up to the f prior. It therefore set aside the regulations embodying the bubble concept as contrary to law. Okay, the basic legal error of the Court of Repeat, the Court of Appeals was to adopt a static judicial definition of the term stationary source when it had decided that Congress itself had not commanded that definition. Respondents do not defend the legal reasoning of the Court of Appeals. Nevertheless, since this court reviews judgments, not opinions, we must determine whether the Court of Appeals' legal error resulted in an erroneous judgment on the validity of the regulations, the Republican regulations. When a court reviews an agency's construction of a statute which it administers, it is confronted with two questions. First, always, is the question whether Congress has directly spoken to the precise issue, question at issue. If the intent of Congress is clear, that is the end of the matter for the court, as well as the agency. Must give effect to the unambiguously expressed intention of the court. I'm going to read that sentence again because I probably screwed it up. I almost got it. If the intent of Congress is clear, that is the end of the matter. For the court, as well as the agency, must give effect to the unambiguously expressed intent of Congress. That is, unless it conflicts with the Constitution, right? You guys know that. If, however, the court determines Congress has not directly addressed the precise question at issue, the court does not simply impose its own construction on the statute, as would be necessary in the absence of an administrative interpretation. Rather, if the statute is silent or ambiguous with respect to the issue, a specific issue, the question for the court is whether the agency's answer is based on a permissible construction of the statute. Let me stop right there. Permissible. What does permissible mean? Reasonable. He's already used the term reasonable. But what makes a reasonable construction permissible? Legally permissible. He doesn't really explain right here. He just kind of asserts. Okay. The power of an administrative agency to administer a congressionally created program necessarily requires the formation of policy and the making of rules to fill any gap left. To fill any gap left by Congress. If Congress has explicitly left a gap for the agency to fill, there is an express delegation of authority to the agency to elucidate a specific provision of the statute by regulation. Such legislative regulations are given controlling weight unless they are arbitrary, capricious, or manifestly contrary to the statute. Sometimes the legislative delegation to an agency on a particular question is implicit rather than explicit. In such a case, a court may not substitute its own construction of a statutory provision for a reasonable interpretation made by the administrator of an agency. We have long recognized that considerable weight should be accorded to an executive department's construction of a statutory scheme. It is and trusted to administer. That's an interesting word, administer. A statutory scheme, it is entrusted to administer. Well, if a major question of law, which controls private parties as well as the government, hangs on a definition of a term which is not defined by Congress, is the executive branch really administering or is it legislating? And then there's a prior question. And the prior question is, wait, who's supposed to be legislating in our republic? Who's supposed to be doing that? Is it the executive? Is the executive the point of contact for legislation in the Constitution? Well, let's take a look at Article 1, Section 1 of the U.S. Constitution. All legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress. Wait, hold on. How many legislative powers? All herein granted. I read this carefully and I haven't seen any legislative powers that were therein granted that allowed Congress to delegate legislation powers to the president or any department under the president, like the EPA. That's really the issue there. That's the deeper issue. Herein granted. There, you read this carefully, you read Article 1. There is no herein granted that allows Congress to delegate some of its legislative power away to anything outside of Congress. That's why I use the term administer. But within that term administer, you have to understand is a whole world, two different legal worlds here. The Democrats are administering the EPA. They are using a concept that costs Chevron a lot of money that are not entailed by the statute. So, in other words, the Democrats are actually legislating in addition to the statute. Republicans win election and they turn that right around and they say, we're going to legislate it back because Congress has not spoken on the issue. So the court is getting in here and saying, well, when a Democrat comes in, and what they do is reasonable, they win. Republican administration wins the election, they do what's reasonable, they win, because Congress had not spoken to that exact issue of that definition. So what ends up happening is he's using the term administer, but really the administration is actually legislating. It's not Congress that's doing it, it's the president's. So you have this whipsaw effect. Democrats in, then all these industries have to conform and try to do business in that environment. Republican wins, and then you have to conform and you have to, and then you got to try to do business within that. It's a whipsaw effect. The same thing could happen if Congress was changing its mind all the time and going back and forth. But it would be sure nice if Congress just kind of made up its mind and had a stable answer. And that's not what's happening. I mean, Congress is supposed to be the one that makes up their mind on this. And so the court is in the middle. The DC Circuit under Ginsburg last time, remember, she said, hey, we got precedents that bind us, and we're basically just going to the per what we think are the purpose. Me personally, I'm going to go with what the precedent said the purpose was. That's and that is a judicial-like answer to go back to precedent. I'm not picking on Ginsburg specifically, but if you read those precedents, I mean, which we didn't yet, maybe we should, but the precedents are saying that they think the purpose can be discerned in a legal way with legal reasoning. But they still grant that Congress hasn't really spoken to this direct issue. So then you go back to the question of why hasn't Congress spoken to this direct issue? Well, they don't want to. It's too hard. It's too hard. There's nothing in it for them to kick up a bunch of a beehive thing. I mean, right now, if it goes wrong, the president gets blamed because the voter is dumb. If it goes wrong in the court gets blamed. Who's off the hook? Congress. Congress is off the hook. See, they're supposed to be doing the heavy lifting, the hard work of defining these terms, but it's hard and it's controversial. And so, if they can avoid blame, they will. They most certainly will. And the court here in 1984 is saying, yeah, it's okay that Congress kind of just take a nap right now. That's all right. Let the presidents decide it. Presidents will take the blame. Or they will, yeah, but the court is saying we're not going to take the blame. Hey, Congress didn't do it. We're not going to take the blame. It's whoever's president, they get, as long as it's ambiguous in the statute and it's reasonable what they did. In other words, it's not arbitrary, capricious, or contrary to the statute. Hey, they take the blame. We're not gonna say anything more than that. So we have long recognized that considerable weight should be accorded to an executive department's construction of a statutory scheme it is entitled to administer, and the principle of deference to administrative interpretations. And there's the term deference. It's where we get the term Chevron deference. Right here. It's on page 844 of the U.S. Reports, 1984, volume 467 in the U.S. Reports. Right here. See, it's 844 right here. The principle of deference. In light of these well-settled principles, I'm on 845. It is clear that the Court of Appeals misconceived the nature of its role in reviewing regulations at issue. Once it determined, after its own examination of the legislation, that Congress did not actually have an intent regarding the applicability of the bubble concept to the permit program, the question before it was not whether, in its view, The concept is inappropriate in the general context of a program designed to improve air quality, but whether the administrator's view, that is the EPA, that's the administ the Environmental Protection Agency administrator, Ann Gorsuch, whether it's the administrator's view that is appropriate in the context of this particular program is a reasonable one. Based on the examination of the legislation and its history, which follows, we agree with the Court of Appeals that the Congress did not have a specific intention on the applicability of the bubble concept in these cases. Congress did not have a specific intention and conclude that the EPA's use of that concept here is a reasonable policy choice. Okay, so let me just clarify what he's saying here. He's saying Congress dropped the ball here. Congress did not clarify the law, which is its job as the only appropriate legislative authority in the United States. Congress, he's not saying it exactly, but he's saying Congress dropped the ball. Given Congress doesn't want to pick the ball up again because it has no incentive to do so, the new Republican administration picked up the ball and ran in a reasonable direction with it. Is it the direction that Congress pointed? No, we're not saying that. Shoot, they could be running off the daggum field, away from the end zone. But as far as Congress did not say where the end zone was. So, as far as we have information from Congress, the only legislative authority in our history, what are they supposed to do? Well, they ran in a reasonable direction with it. And yes, it could be toward the parking lot over there, and they think they're scoring a touchdown. But no one knows what the hell's going on. And the court, the DC Circuit under Gorsuch, she does not Gorsuch, Ginsburg, she can't say, no, you can't run that way. She can't say that because Congress is the one that gets to say that, not the court. And Congress didn't say that. So you can run whatever reasonable way you want to go, as long as it's not arbitrary or capricious or contrary to statute. Because it's ambiguous. There's no definition. There's a term that's used, stationary source. It's never defined. And it could mean one of two different things. All right, we have section 3, section 4, 5, 6, 7, we have a ways to go, but we've already covered quite a bit, and we're going to go through the entire thing. So I think I'm going to stop right now. We're going to do section 3 next time. We're going to do section 4 next time, section 5. And then I think we're going to do 6, 7, and the conclusion next time. So we'll break it up into three different subparts. Let me know what you guys think in the comments on this. This is a major separation of powers issue. And it is still a live issue. You know why? Because this court decision is dead now because of Republicans last year. It's dead. It's dead. Chevron deference is dead. What does that mean for the Trump administration? What does that mean for any future Democratic administrations? Well, I've got some thoughts on it, but I always hate to predict. I like to try to explain after, and I know people don't like that. Everyone, tries to get you to predict things. When you get your PhD, the only thing they want to know is how to predict things. And it's like, well, my work is not really about predicting the future. It's about explaining the past. And hopefully you have some resources to understand the wise path before us, the wisest path before us, but it's not always clear. I'll just give you this little tidbit. The courts are going to become more active in discerning whether regulations promulgated by agencies are lawful. And if you have the right judges in there, it's going to be great. It's going to be great for everybody. I'm not saying it's going to be great for Republicans. It's going to be great for everybody because the right kind of judges are good for everybody. If you have the wrong kind of judges, it's going to be a disaster because the judges now will be making the decision. It's not going to be like Chevron, where they're saying, "Hey, hold on, we give deference to whoever is in office in these cases where there's ambiguity because Congress is trying to do too much and they leave some gaps and the president is now legislating those gaps. We're not going to give deference anymore." So now what I'm trying to say is there's extra pressure now to get the right judges in there. There's even more pressure now than before. Because there's different judicial philosophies, and some of them are crazy. And so you might have a situation where the judges, especially the Court of Appeals level, because they make most of the law, the case law. The Supreme Court doesn't hear that many cases every year, and they control their own docket. So you're not guaranteed a Supreme Court review. But the appeals courts in the middle, the circuit courts, the three-judge panels, they don't control their own dockets. They have to take the appeals. They have to. So 99% of your case law is going to be made at that level. And that means that Trump and the new administration has extra pressure now to fill that middle, the Court of Appeals, the circuit judges, with the right judges that have the correct definitions and philosophies of law. And even then, they're going to make mistakes. But those mistakes are going to be a lot harder to correct with Chevron gone. Okay, that's the first thing I'm going to say. The second thing is Congress has to get back into the game and start being more specific or just do less. Don't legislate as much. To stop creating, stop regulating everything under the sun. Stop. Nobody can do that. And especially not a group of 535 people. You guys, five, 3 to 5 people have a hard time agreeing on things. 535 people, it's virtually impossible. There are always going to be gaps, and the more that Congress is expected to legislate and to regulate, the more they're going to leave those gaps for either the president under Chevron, or now that Chevron's dead, now the courts, whoever they are, and those guys can't be fired, and they go to Democrat law schools and they make shit up. Why in the world would Republicans on the Supreme Court reverse Chevron when they know so much is riding on it? Well, I have a correct theory on that. And it's not crazy. It's because Republicans want Congress to be accountable. They want Congress to do its freaking job that the framers set up for it. The voters have stopped asking Congress to do their job. The voters are actually crazy. A lot of the craziness in our system, it comes from the voters, man. I'm telling you. The voters are lazy, distracted, and corrupt. That's the American people. So you're going to have problems. There are going to be problems. And I'm not saying there isn't any hope, not saying there's not a way forward, not saying. I'm saying you're not going to like the way forward. You're not going to like it. I'll see you next time. It's Thursday, 23 January 2025, in the year of our Lord Jesus Christ. Take care.